Blog Talk Radio.
One who experiences a miracle doesn't always see the miracle in his or her life. And this is a time of fear, but it's also a time of good cheer. We have to make the decision, what side are we on? Do we revere life and want to reduce the strife, or we're deifying death, which is not a place to go, blessed souls. Even if one pronounces that deification of death, the name of one creator, which it's not the plan, I believe, of the creator that we should deify death. Anyway, blessings and greetings and blessings as we're alive, because we're trying to stay alive in a higher frequency called Soul Talk Radio. This is Soul Talk Presentation 796, Proverbs Teaching to Access Wisdom and Righteous Presentation number 19. Blessings our Eternal Creator, Baruch Hashem, Shalom, Peace, and Bracha, blessing upon the entire human family condition. The Creator's help right now. Our broadcast is taking place on October 29th, 2023 at 11:32 a.m. live from Turtle Island Eastern Standard Time equals AKA the USA equals Unified Soul Actualization. An essential topic for discussion will be sharing the written and oral Torah traditions regarding King Solomon's Proverbs, one of the most powerful teachings from the Israelite Tanakh, Torah, Prophets, Holy Writings. Our call number will be, and it is, 563-999-3688. That's 563-999-3688. If you want to make the program a little more organically spontaneous. Meanwhile, the Eternal Creator bless and protect you and your loved ones peacefully and pleasantly. The tags for today's show are Eternal Creator, Universal Redemption, divine image of children of Israel connected to the divine image of children of Noah, written oral tradition of Israel. And as we segue out of the opening song, this is One You Believe from the Maccabees. It's a cappella music. The only instrumentation here are the beautiful voices of these young men. So let's turn down the music, bring on our co-host, and let's bring on the shoe. Well, joining us today, Baruch Hashem, after a week that he was not involved, that's my fault because I scheduled the program very late, in the very last moment, Dennis Ryan, our Rambam activist, student, teacher, disseminator of the teachings of the Nesher Gadol, the great eagle, Rambam Maimonides, Rabbi Moshe Ben Maimon. Good morning, Dennis.
Well, good to all done. How are you?
Well, as I mentioned last week, there's a quotation from the Zohar. One heart, part of my heart is rejoicing, and one part of my heart is crying. Because again, aside from, you know, the conflicts that are in the world, the language being used by different sides of different perspectives of what's going on in the world, it's just still too abrasive. And we know people have lost families on all sides, whether it be in Ukraine, whether it be in Russia, whether it be in Israel, whether it be amongst the Arabic people under the aegis of the PLO or the Hamas. But still, the rhetoric, I think, has to tune down a little bit. And perhaps what could tune down that rhetoric, Dennis, is a prophecy in the prophet Zephaniah. I'd like to start off the program with this, and we'll get your take on this. Chapter 3, verse 17. Now, the reason why I'm kind of connected to this verse is that there's a man from the Caribbean who drives in my neighborhood in Crown Heights, And he has on the back of his pickup truck this verse. He says, see Sophoniah chapter 3, verse 17. So here's the verse. The Lord your God is in your midst, a mighty one who will save. He will rejoice over you with joy. He will be silent in his love. He will jubilate over you with song. So in terms of the mighty one who will save, the Lord God is in your midst. So let your hands not slacken, for he is a mighty one. He will save you from the mighty ones of the nations. And that's a commentary by the Radak. Dennis, how can we get human beings to realize on a most existential level, which means in this very moment, the Creator is amongst all of us, and he is waiting for us to pick up the pace, to pick up the good thoughts, to pick up the good speech, to pick up the good actions, to make this place actually what it was originally intended to be, a garden for all of humanity to reap the benefits of the blessings of bringing down the divine presence, which is an expression at some level ultimately of the Creator's essence, that people should be praising the Creator and not cursing their fellow man.
Well, we have many examples in history of where people use a language that's extreme, but they don't really believe in it. They'll use the words, but they don't believe in it. In American history, we have a famous saying of, give me liberty or give me death. Now, the speakers of that, did they really want death? Or were they
right.
really more interested in liberty? But to make the exception or the difference in the wording, they said, well, I'll either live or die. Living or dying is not a choice of yours. God put you on the earth to live. If you want to die and end it, that's your choice. But God that never prefaced that death is preferable to anything else. Never. Never in the history of the world, even though people yell it when they become very uncivil or they feel like fighting or angry, they lose their sense of language and they go to extreme words. And words like kill, 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 do they really mean kill? Do they want injured or do they want somebody to be hurt? Do they really want a life to be taken away? Some people don't realize that that's the ultimate sacrifice of giving in to the devil is that you prefer death over everything else. That's not the human way. The human way is there's always another way. And the other way is open. And that is open by God, that he is forgiving and that you can always go back to him and rely on him. There is no end of the world scenario that everybody's facing on a daily basis. Death is not an option. Death is an occurrence that will happen if you're not careful. But to think you want to die today, why in the world's name would you want to die today? What makes today different than tomorrow? We are living people to do the best we can. And we rely on everybody else to understand that we are all surviving at the same time. We don't have a building that we go to die. We don't have a city that we're going to die in. We don't have a place, any place in the world that's known as you can go there and die. No, you can die any place you want to, but do you really want to? Do you really want to die? End it all? No. But yet we'll use that in our verbiage of our language. And we'll say, no, I'd rather die. Nobody really means that, but they get the impression from the language of what their preference is. But that doesn't mean you're ready for the final alternative. You don't need to. You have a mind. You can reason. And you have God behind you.
Beautiful. Speaking, just piggybacking off your subject, Dennis, about living and dying, I'm looking at the current world population, and according to this is an active counter of world population, that it says that there have been 110 million births this year and 50 million deaths this year, which means the human population has grown by more than 60 million, and it's going up and up and up. In fact, it says today that today, whatever particular reason, that there were, and again, the number keeps on running, right? You can see it for yourself. You can go to worldometers.info/world, then dash population forward slash. So there have been 178,000 people born today, children, babies, and 80,000 deaths. So the percentage of being born into this world is actually greater than the number of people passing away today, which is pretty amazing. It's a 2-to-1 ratio. Now, people are talking about overpopulation. No. Maybe it's positive growth for human beings that now more than ever you can have a 2-to-1 ratio of human beings being born with people dying. And I would suggest that this is part of heading towards the redemption, the universal redemption, the messianic redemption, we call it in Israel, or of Israel. You can call it what you want, dice and slice, any way you want. But you see that the fact that the world, with all its problems, with all that is holding us down, and the wars and the hatred and the jealousy and the hate, the unnecessary competition, yet still with all the things that are going wrong, that there's a 2-to-1 rate, there's more than a 2-to-1 ratio of people being born today over people passing away. And before we turn to Dennis for a comment on that, I just want to mention in terms of our graphics, the United States is still holding out as our largest audience at 84.83%, followed by Canada, 3.45%. We have a tie for third, Australia, the land down under, and Jamaica, the diamond in the Caribbean, both at 2.76%. Israel went down a little bit. Hey, my Hebra, I'm a little disappointed. You went down to 2.07, but I guess people are so involved in what's going over there. So, Dennis, you know, we can't choose to die, but we see, and we can't choose to live, but we see right now as we speak on October 29th, 2023, number of people being born is 2-to-1 over people passing away. So there must be something that Creator is telling us that he wants us to populate the world, not to depopulate the world.
Well, there's one thing that bothers us all, whether we're on one side of the fence or the other, whether we think they're the good guys or the bad guys or whatever guys are involved. And the one thing that gets to all humans is the death of a baby. Why? Because babies never had a time to pick enemies. And they died? Yes, it happens all the time, but not too frequently. But if you want to get people aggravated and bothered, you can start talking about babies dying. Why? Because it's a one-way argument. There are no two sides of this. A baby dying means your future or the future is being disregarded. You kill somebody's future and they didn't even have a chance. Well, nobody, human, non-human even for that matter, would care about trying to explain it because it's the absence of life. And once you kill a baby, the baby never stood a chance. But the baby is not your enemy. The baby never did anything against you. The baby didn't have time to harm anybody else. So we humans have a separate place in our thinking regarding babies. And babies can do no harm, so therefore there is no evil. It takes them many years to mature and to develop any of those evil habits that humans may pick up. But while they are babies, they live in a different world because they are our future. And we don't want to interfere with our future in any way. But then again, if you're worried about a baby's future, what about your future? We all have futures. But if you induce the word death, there is no future. You want to end everything right now. There are no chances. You can't explain. And no one's going to listen to you if you did. It's all over. But nobody wants that. That is the worst alternative that you can possibly think of, that you didn't get a chance to explain yourself or at least say, I can do better. You have no chances left when death occurs. So when a little baby faces death for any reason, we all feel a little sorry and we don't believe it should have happened because you're depriving a human being of their future. And that's something that we all live for. We all live for tomorrow. Tomorrow is our future. Yes, it's a matter of hours, but it's a continuation of life. We don't want to interrupt our continuation of life. We have a religion. Most of us believe in a savior of some type. We certainly know there's a creator. He created all of us. He or she created all of us. And therefore, a unity that's going on. The unity is called life. We all have life, and we all have a future. All those that are deprived of life and a future have zero chances of explaining themselves or understanding what they're missing. Because if you can't have a future in front of you, you have nothing.
True. Thank you, Dennis. Speaking of the loss of babies, I'm just looking at, again, not casting judgment, but that I see, according to statistics, that in America, as of 2020, there were 620,000 babies aborted. Now, I'm not commenting on whether in the first trimester, second or third. I'm just saying there were 620,000 lives whose futures, for whatever reason, justifiable or not, were cut short. And if we think about that, that should be a humbling benchmark for all of us who are alive and embrace life. And hopefully we can utter our prayers that, you know, I'm not on a campaign to make abortion illegal, but that we should hopefully pray and hope and think positively that any person, any woman, I should say, because only women get pregnant, any woman that gets pregnant, that she'll be able to carry out the baby to full term in a healthy manner. Your take on these matters, since you were just talking about life and death and about babies.
Well, there was a solution that was offered many millennium ago, and it was an Englishman who came out with a solution for the Irish problem. And he noticed that the Irish were creating too many babies and that they would be running out of food for all the people. So rather than face a famine because there wasn't enough people, enough food for the people, he proposed a singular solution. And everybody thought, wow, what a famous scientist, what a guy. And the solution was that the Irish should eat their babies. That way they won't run out of food.
This was
established a long time ago, and it's in history. It's been documented. And the Englishman who proposed this was a famous idea. Now, he thought he was doing a service to the world. At what expense? He thought that humans should solve their own problems by assimilating what other humans are made of, because that can be ingested as part of their dietary needs. But this is considered today extreme, far extreme. But as some people will still say, well, we got to stop them. We should kill them. And it's easy to kill a baby because there's no defense there. But why would somebody with a twisted mind want to do that when, in effect, it's been explained to us everything that's available to us of how we can live our future. We rely on a God, and we expect everybody else to understand what life is about because we're all surviving. Nobody is an exception to the survival rules on Earth. So therefore, we must pull together and show some unity and temper our speech to the point that the poor innocent are not the recipients of our anger. Why in God's name would anybody get mad at a baby when in effect the baby can't explain himself?
Right.
If the baby wants to cry, well, we feel a little bit and put something in their mouth to stop the crying. But there are some people say, if that baby doesn't stop crying, I'll kill myself. Whoa, that's an extreme concept. We have many ways of subduing the babies without hurting them. One of them is to put some milk in their mouth. The other is to try to get them to go to sleep. But that's okay. Those are temporary situations because tomorrow is always a different story. Each day we live is another part of our history. We create history, and we don't care to leave negative ideas behind ourselves. We may get mixed up in our speech, but that's a mistake because people don't understand sometimes when they use fatal words like kill, end your life. So we treat it as an extreme thing. And that is even when you commit a crime. We don't put you to death unless you have a jury and a trial and a hearing and everything. And this may go on for years, trying to decide whether you should live or die because you committed certain crimes. But even at that, we don't make it instantaneously. Why? Because we treat it as a sacred thing. And that sacred thing is life. And life is there for everybody. And if you forget that, you will cause problems no matter where you go. Guaranteed. Everybody is for life. Nobody says we're against life. There's no religion in the world that's against life. Any good person wouldn't even think of ending their lives. Why? It's too soon. You have time on your side to repent, to explain, to plead with God, and you can make good use of it. You can pray. Nothing wrong with praying when you feel like you're hopeless or there's nothing left. If there's nothing left, is it easy to say a prayer or curse the darkness?
Nice, Dennis. And I would say, too, if a person is feeling alone and helpless and their prayers are uttered and yet still they feel a certain emptiness, reach out to other people. Call a friend, speak to the spouse, speak to the children if one is meritorious, speak to the grandchildren, speak to one's faith-based guide. You know, there's many options, but the main thing is if there's an emptiness in any person's human experience and they've, according to their estimate, have exhausted whatever efforts they can to try to improve the situation on a very existential level, still, it's like the Almighty is just waiting for you to make one more move. Sometimes it's just take one more step. I mean, the difference between, a person doing something that's self-injurious and going the opposite way, having a sudden epiphany, I can do better than this, it is huge. And it could be just one thought. As the Maggid of Mezritch, who succeeded the Baal Shem Tov from the modern Hasidic movement, said, every thought is a world. Let your worlds, based upon your thoughts, empower you, not disempower you. And I know you always have words of wisdom to utter about the power of thought, Dennis, and where thoughts can take us. So maybe you'd like to comment on this brief commentary that I just offered.
Well, I like the word emptiness that you used. We must remember our minds are always active. There's no on and off switch. You cannot stop your mind from thinking. You are living, you are surviving, and you're using your mind. Yes, you use your body as well, but your mind controls and directs mainly everything you do. So therefore, we must remember that you have a mind to think and use. If you're not thinking or using it, then you're in trouble. Because then that evil way starts creeping into your thoughts and you start splitting
beautiful moral ideas. Life is your mind. Life doesn't have a switch like an electric bulb. You can turn your mind off. Even when you sleep, your mind is active. It's thinking. It's working. And it's following what you want to do. It's not inventing new ways. Thoughts come and go, and we keep on revisiting them. And to think that whether you're a person all alone, you're going to be empty, not if your mind is working, not if you're using it. It's when you reject life that we have problems of understanding of your future. But you can't reject life. Your mind won't let you. You can't turn it off. There's no way of turning your mind off. So you must live with your mind. And to do that, you got to have a day mind and a night mind. The day mind is when you're doing everything with everybody else. The night mind is usually loneliness. That doesn't mean emptiness. It means you have to deal with your own thoughts. During the day, you can deal with other people's thoughts. But at night, when you want peace, calm, and quiet, you have to deal with your own mind. If you don't, you're not going to get any peaceful sleep. So therefore, enjoy your mind. It's a positive thing. Use it to your advantage. Don't let it go to waste.
Thank you, Dennis. It reminds me of a statement I once read. Actually, I think I heard him say, Bob Marley, the great reggae artist, said, "Where I live is in my mind." That he considered actually one of his places of shelter was in his thinking process, which is, I think it's a very healthy human activity to realize that one of the places that we live in, aside from our physical environment, wherever we live around the world, is we live with our thoughts. And our thoughts construct a sense of security if the thoughts are positive and they're empowering. And I just wanted to share that before we go on to the next segment, plucking out one verse from King David's Psalms number 63, which is talking about something even greater than life itself when we're talking about the Creator's attributes. So I'd like to read that. That's chapter 63, verse 4, where King David, with prophetic inspiration, wrote, "For better is your kindness than life. My lips shall praise you." So what type of kindness are we talking about, blessed souls? So there's multiple, according to the oral tradition of Israel, there's multiple dimensions of this kindness, which is better than life. So the kindness, he first is brought down by Targum, who was someone who was a convert to the Jewish Mosaic Abrahamic faith. He says, "The kindness that you will put upon or give to the righteous in the world to come far surpasses the good life which you grant the wicked in this world." Yes, goodness is granted to the wicked in this world, but it's with a calculation, you know, of payback time after everyone's literal 120 years or figurative 120 years. So here's another dimension of kindness. This is according to Radak, another famous rabbi, who says, "You displayed your kindness to mankind when you endowed humanity with intelligence. For this faculty elevates man's existence above the life devoid of higher intelligence experienced by animals and other living beings." So Matsuda's David, another commentator, "The entire purpose of my life is to utilize your kindness," which he interprets as intelligent speech, "so that my lips shall praise you. If I am deprived of this opportunity, my life is bereft of all purpose. Therefore, my soul thirsts for you and my flesh longs for you. For every intelligent person yearns to fulfill his or her mission in life." So then, so we have three gradations of kindness. One about being blessed in the world to come. And the second one is that we're endowed with humanity. Our humanity is endowed with intelligence to lift us up above the animal experience. And the third thing is that we should use our speech, intelligent speech, to make use of the kindness the Creator has given us, our human intellect, and our ability to speak very uniquely as human beings. Your take on these matters?
Well, to me, kindness hinges on the word respect. You must have respect for yourself, you must have respect for your fellow humans, and you must have the greatest respect for your Creator. If you can keep respect going on those three levels, you'll show goodness, kindness, and you'll show that you're really a practicing human. We don't have a lot of people of the world like that, because we have people thinking, well, I did my part. Those people are not doing their part, and God didn't help us out when we needed them. Well, that sounds like a bunch of hooey, because that's a whole bunch of excuses. The excuses are easy to come by, but you must face the truth. Did you show respect? Did you show kindness? Are you aware that there is the Creator, that there's other people, and you? How are they all going to fit together? Yes, there's three levels, but those three levels are always interactive. They don't stop until you reach your final objective, and that's the cemetery. But prior to that, you have three levels that you have to worry about to a certain degree. You can love yourself. You can love your fellow man, but you should, most of all, love your Creator. Why? Because your Creator is all-forgiving. The Creator always wants you to come back, and he's there, he, she, to help you under any circumstances. Other humans may or may not hurt, may not help, I'm sorry, may not help, but they try to ease the pain. The pain of what? Of trying to be kind. It shouldn't be a painful act on your part. But then again, are you kind to yourself? If you put tremendous restraints on yourself, are you going to transfer that to other people? Why can't you be happy with yourself? You must be happy. You must show restraint and respect so that other people will follow what you're doing. And believe it or not, there's a whole bunch of people who end up doing the same thing. And we call that everybody believes they should do good, but they go about it practicing it differently. So what we must do is constantly revise what we're doing and examine it to see if we're doing the right thing. You can live your whole life and make wrong decisions. You still have a chance to change your thinking. I'm not saying you're going to happen in an instant. It's not a lightning or a thunderbolt. It's your mind with your understanding yourself, other people, and your Creator. If you can't handle those three things or understand, then you're missing something in your thinking. But don't worry. You can always regain whatever you thought you didn't do today, you can do tomorrow. And in some cases, you can do better tomorrow. And we must always look to better ourselves by doing goodness and showing respect. And when you do that, other people act in kind. And that is what mass thinking is all about. And that's what our Creator thought, that we would all have some type of unity as to which direction we're going in. Are we going in a good direction or a bad direction? That's still up to you to make those decisions.
Okay, thank you, Dennis. We're now going to move on to the essential presentation today. We've got plenty of time to go slowly. And I went a little further without your presence and Robert Walker's presence. Robert is involved in some personal affairs. Unfortunately, he cannot commit right now to be engaged in this, in our efforts here, humble efforts. But we're in chapter 2 of the book of Proverbs, verse 13, which you could connect the dots and say has some bearing on what's going on in the world today. But that will be for everyone who's listening around the world to make their own decision on this. So chapter 2, verse 13, from those who forsake the ways of uprightness, or righteousness, to go on ways of darkness. Now, Mitzuda David says that to abandon the way of truth, to adhere to the ways of apostasy. And Ibn Nachmiyish says not only do they forsake the way of uprightness, but they go in the ways of darkness. So it's understandable that a person can, their hands or their efforts can slacken, but to, say, reduce their amount of good living or good choices and then choose to go in a way that's crooked or, as described here, spiritually or allegorically as darkness, it's, King Solomon is giving a pretty strong piece of advice. Don't, just because a person might slacken off, that's not, that shouldn't provide them the encouragement to now go in the ways of negativity. Dennis, your take on these matters.
If at any time you feel like you need a change, why would you change for the worse or the bad? When in effect there's so many positive things you can do in, you call brightness and darkness. That's like saying it's good and evil. Evil is not necessarily in darkness, but then again, but do bad things in the sunlight? Yes, they do. Why? Because they don't care what time it is on the clock. They just feel like doing it. They decided, premeditated, and thought about it, and said, well, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try that. But they're not understanding it because they have to understand what the outcome of your actions are. You are responsible for every action you take, and you must be able to explain it to at least our Creator. You may not be able to explain it to our fellow man, and you may not understand it yourself even though it was your own idea. So this gets a little confusing. So we must be able to spread our thoughts out and understand which are the good ones and which are the bad ones. We always have choices, and the choices have nothing to do with the daylight or the nighttime. The choices are in your mind. And again, your mind never stops. So what are you going to emphasize each day as you wake up? Is there things that you can understand that you didn't do well the previous day, but you can improve on them? There's lots of room for improvement. You can change your ways, undo a whole bunch of bad things by doing good, showing kindness one day at a time. You must remember you're going to be around for many, many days. So if you take it one day at a time, did you accomplish anything one day at a time? You can if you want to, but do you really want to? And yes, most people try, but there's other things that get in our way. They are called obstacles. We must remember there's always going to be some obstacles that we have to overcome. And overcoming those things is a good way of showing kindness and respect. So think positive, and we used to say, follow your nose. No. Follow your mind. Your mind is not a bad thing. It's yours, and use it for good things.
Thank you, Dennis. Now we're going on to chapter 2, verse 14. Proverbs, from those who rejoice to do evil and delight in the perversity of evil. This is a pretty heavy one. Mitzuda David comments, unlike a person who believes in divine retribution, meaning a day of judgment, they dread this day if he falls into a sinful type of or a negative lifestyle. However, those who rejoice in evil while they're committing sins are now, not only are they rejoicing in their own particular evil, that they, Ibn Israq comments, that they delight in the perversity of others, other wicked people. So it's kind of become like an affirmation of an individual delighting in his or her acts of evil, and then feeling, I guess, maybe justified or affirmed that other people also engage in acts of evil. So Mitzvah David also, when talking about delight in the perversity of evil, whenever they find an opportunity to distort the intention according to their evil thoughts. Now, the intention is that we should try to, as I mentioned before, in the commentary on Psalms, chapter 63, I think it was verse 4, is that we should be fully appreciative that we've been given this kindness called human intellect, and how much more so we've been given this kindness to use it for good speech. And yet, people are now delighting in the opposite of goodness and are actually feeling, you know, affirmed. They're feeling justified when they see other people committing acts of wickedness. And this was something that was, unfortunately, a big problem in Sodom and Gomorrah and in other civilizations which fell because they lost their moral compass. So, Dennis, how can we encourage people from the very basic level? If they do something wrong, okay, they did something wrong. We all have done something wrong. And doing something wrong is in the category of doing evil, whether it be like something that's really perversely evil or something that's, you know, like it's a mistake. It's a mistake in evil. But to delight in evil, certainly a person has lost sight of the kindness given to them by the human intellect, which, by the way, according to Torah tradition, your human intellect is directly configured to your divine image, connecting to a higher thinking process, which is certainly an act of kindness from the Creator that He gave to us, such an image which is divine. Dennis.
We have a concept, a human concept, and it's called safety in numbers. Safety in numbers means that you can get a bunch of humans together, and will they all think of the positive side? Will some of them think of the negative? Yes, they'll try to expound on the negative that other people should. But there's always somebody who will say, no, we shouldn't do that. That's not a good thing. So we depend on the safety of numbers. And if you're with the wrong group, the wrong bunch of humans, you better change your associations. Because if you're with the people who do nothing but negative things, you're wasting your time. There's a lot of people who do good things. You should be close to them. Not that you have to love them, but you have to participate in their thinking because they're trying to stay on the safe and honest track so that they can say they're living a good life and they're not expounding on the negative facts of life. You don't need the negativity. There's so much positive thoughts. For someone to get lost in negativity means you have a personality problem or a mental problem where you take delight in bad things. I mean, how many people can say they get up and they kick a fellow human and they feel better for it? Why? Because you get satisfaction out of inflicting pain. You think pain is a good thing for other people, but not for you. You cannot separate, because whatever you do to other people, they will do unto you. So therefore, we have a thing called safety in numbers. In other words, if a bunch of people decide to pray, are you going to try to stop them? Are you going to try to distract them? Sorry, once people have a mental capability that they must honor their Creator, you're not going to interfere with them. They are going to do it no matter what. Why? Because they feel like they were put on this earth to do good things. And that is the foundation that we all participate in. And we feel better when we do good things. There's no way that you can find justification for doing bad things and then saying, wow, I accomplished a lot. No. How many people are in jail that say they're innocent? They're innocent? In their own eyes, they're innocent, but not in the general public. That's why they're usually put in jail. Yes, there are some mistakes where we do put innocent people into jail, but I don't want to go into that right now. But the bulk of the people, the mass of the people, follow each other.
And if everybody's thinking positive and they think about our Creator and stay away from bad things, we will all feel a little bit better. Why? Because it's far better to enjoy doing good things than to enjoy a bad thing. Bad things can you enjoy? There's a whole bunch of them, and they don't lead to a good outcome. But if you stay on the bright side, on the side of good people, and follow where the mass of people go, and stay away from the bad things, you will have a better life. You may not see it at first, but after day after day after day, you will see that you're staying away from the bad things. We all know what the bad things are. They're not hidden. They're out in the open. And they're free. Easy to use. Easy to feel. You want to take the easy way out? Or would you rather take the way out that leads to a good straight path of positive thinking, your thinking, controlled by your mind, and honoring our Creator?
Beautiful. We're going further. Blessed Souls, chapter 2, verse 15. Who are crooked in their ways and perverse in their paths. So again, it's pretty understandable, those who are crooked in their ways, but perverse in their paths, meaning even in their corruption, it's crooked. I mean, you see that when people commit heinous crimes, their thinking is so twisted because some person insulted them, or some person owed them money, or someone didn't give them enough attention, rather than, you know, activating the kindness bequeathed to them in their human intellect to try to figure out, well, how can I get a different outcome than the disappointment or even the emotional and sometimes even physical pain that I've incurred from another person? Instead, they plan and they plot to bring this person down, whether emotionally, spiritually, intellectually, economically, up to the point they actually are prepared to take their life in just the most crooked of ways, the most, you know, where the person had no sense of self-defense, just to take them, snatch them from the world. It's a horrible occurrence. It's been happening for thousands and thousands of years, but, you know, at one point, when, Dennis, do we try to educate people? Okay, person made a mistake, admitted the mistake, or they've been shunted, they've been not paid attention to. It shouldn't justify them getting even worse in their crookedness, because they're kind of bent out of shape anyway from whatever, that lack of attention or lack of respect or whatever they're lacking in their lives.
We have many instances where people use excuses for everything and they feel justified. Yet, when you were growing up, and you were learning from your parents and your teachers, there's a lot of little things that you have to put into place. Let's take a white lie. Can everybody give a little white lie that doesn't hurt anybody else? Oh, it sounds so simple, so nice. But once you accept lying, what happens when you have big black lies that you have to lie about? Where did it all begin? Where did it all fall apart? Where did you accept the negative side of society, of humanity? You did it because little things, you didn't realize the little things in life add up to the big things. We don't start with big things when you're small. We start off with little concepts. Do right. Be correct. Follow what your parents say. We ask you to be educated and to accumulate your knowledge so that you can tell the difference between good and bad. If there's obstacles in your way, you learn how to overcome them. You don't learn how to become them because you want to overcome them. That's a difference. Far easier to join a negative idea than to say, that is a negative idea and I'm not going to follow it. But then again, that all depends on how you were brought up and all those little things of understanding of what is good and what is bad. If you missed all those good things, and that's all your parents would educate you with. They would tell you what you should not do, what you should not think, and what you should not say. If you didn't listen to them, does that mean that you are acquiring negative understanding? Yes, it does. But you can always change that. There's always a way of getting around and being positive. Positivity, get rid of it. It may not be something that you press a button and it disappears. Wrong. You may have picked up some bad habits, but those habits can be changed, and you can always think of a positive way of doing things. So why not do the positive? Because negative doesn't lead you to good things.
Thank you, Dennis. Now we're going on to chapter 2, verse 16. And I need some clarification because we don't want to give the impression that the Torah uses sexist language for negative attributes. So let's read what the verse says, and then I'll give a commentary to the opposite of how. Well, let's just read the words and then we'll talk it out. So chapter 2, verse 16, to save you from a strange woman, from a foreign one who makes her words smooth. Now, the strange woman or the harlot is, as presented later on, we'll see in Proverbs, is referring to not just the physical harlot, which we're not coming to judge a harlot or a prostitute, what I'm going to say, but rather it's a strange way of human relationship as opposed to the normal binary husband-wife connection. So this is referring to an assembly of idolaters. The strange woman is alluding to that. And also, at the same time, too, that Rashi explains, it's not just talking about an actual adulteress, because to be saved from a strange woman is allegorically referring to be saved from sin. Rather, the strange woman here is allegorically pointing towards the direction of casting off all the yoke of the commandments of the Torah for, you know, the Jewish people, the seven Noahic commandments for the nations of the world. But I want to end off in a positive way in this commentary that Avraham, the first patriarch of Israel, was married to the first matriarch of Israel, Sarah, and of her it was said, Hakol Mei Isha, everything comes from the wife, meaning any blessings that Avraham got was in the merit of his wife. So a good woman, not a strange woman, the good woman is literally the woman who, when is respected and nourished on a physical, spiritual, and intellectual level by her husband, will produce outcomes way beyond the husband's capability, just as she took the tiny seed within herself and let it develop for 9 or 9 plus months or something less than 9 months into an entity that is outside of the mother, father, husband, wife connection, namely the baby. I mean, of course, the baby was the byproduct of the father, mother, and God's blessings that he or she should come into the world, but it's a whole new entity. So the good woman, of whom we can say, Kol Mei Isha, everything comes from the woman, that this is ultimately the alternative to the strange woman, which is the forsaking the responsibilities of carrying out God's law. Dennis, any questions or commentaries on this matter?
Yes, much too often we read scriptures saying that there's negativity in women. Well, just as much negativity in man as there is in woman.
Mm-hmm.
You have good women, you have good men. You have bad women, you have bad men. So it isn't that evil emanates from women. No, it can emanate from men too. The equality is always there. In the word woman is the word man. So even though we talk about man as being an entity, the word woman includes that entity, W-O-M-A-N. So we call them women, but they're really a part of mankind. So whenever we talk about the sexes or the men and women of the world, we're talking about it as mankind. So it's a unity of all humans together, so that it's a participation of both female and male. And there's only one way to make babies, as far as I know, and that is when the two get together and they decide that there's a future and they want to be part of it. You can be a part of it if you create the baby, because they have whole lives in front of them, and they may be able to do what you didn't do and make the world better. So it's a positive concept. And go forth and procreate. That was one of the things that was given to us in the Bible, and that's why we have male and female. It was there for a positive and a solid idea to keep our civilization and mankind going. So we may all have our faults, but when a man and a woman get together to create life, new life, that is a purpose that our Creator had in mind when he put us on the planet. So we're participating in what our Creator wanted. Very hard to say that there's negative ideas in any event. It is all positive. And once you take over and get in alignment with our Creator, you don't have much room for negativity. Why? Because you're concentrating on the positive. If you're concentrating on the positive, you're pushing out the negativity. So enjoy your mind, enjoy your positive things, and enjoy what you may produce in your lifetime.
Thank you, Dennis. And by the way, that brings us to the close of another presentation. I'd like to thank Dennis, for you coming on. These were potent words that you shared, and hopefully I contributed to some level commensurate to what you spoke about. But blessed souls, again, we are praying for peace. We're praying for an era where there's no more hatred, jealousy, or unwanted competition. And when we find ourselves in that world, where it's not just ourselves projecting out it, like some sort of just, you know, utopian philosophy, because by us, Israel, it's not a utopian philosophy. It's an eventual reality which our eyes are pining for and our souls are longing for. So we want to share with everyone that the power of prayer, the power of the kindness invested to you to activate your human intellect for good thought, speech, and action is within your grasp. Questions, do you want to make the effort if you haven't been up to par? None of us are totally up to par. If there more of us were up to par, we'd have a different world situation, I believe, honestly speaking. So we're going to end off today, as we have been recently, with One Day, which is the Maccabees again, who started the show, and a segue out of our today's humble presentation, singing Matasiah is One Day, where one day, it won't just be a song, it'll be the reality of what is portrayed in the lyrics. So let's end off in a way of a Havachad, one love, one destiny calling out for all of us, but dark and dark from a peaceful, pleasant way. And just remember, you have no reason to be disappointed. You've been anointed with a Tzelem Elokim, your divine image, which is not an imaginary thing. It is part of the human experience. Let's go out and experience, everyone, a wonderful, blessed, peaceful week. And we see peace reigning through the world, because the attribute of peace emanating from the Creator, who is beyond past, present, and future, has allowed this manifest. So here we go now, One Day by the Maccabees. Take care, everyone.